And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? DJ here today. Bucky is not here, but the topic is the Dallas Cowboys and their big win over the New York Giants. So if you go through the Rolodex and you want to find the best guest to discuss what's going on with the Dallas Cowboys, there's really only one option, and I've got her here. Jane Slater joining the show today. Jane, how you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I appreciate you joining us here. I do want to, you're in the breaking news business, but I want to break some news for our audience as well, because we have audience that's always looking for something new to listen to out there, and I understand that you have a new podcast that I need to check out, our listeners need to check out. So before we dig into these Cowboys, tell me about this new podcast you've got.
I appreciate you showing us a little bit of love. It's called The Boys and Girl Podcast. Colin Coward asked me and my producer here in Dallas, Bobby Belt, who, if Cowboys fans follow me or follow him, he's a bit of a stat savant, master researcher that's always able to tell these amazing stories and narratives with numbers. And he has great relationships in the business as well. And so we've had a lot of fun doing it. It's about 45 minutes a podcast. We drop it twice a week on Wednesdays and Fridays. And we're already talking Cowboys so much in Dallas between the two of us. And this was sort of this opportunity for us to go ahead and carry that out to the fans is sort of this add-on conversation that, you know, we only get so many minutes within the NFL network when we do these hits from Dallas. So this is just all that stuff that ends up on the cutting room floor.
Yeah, it's got to be nice. You don't have anybody in your ear yelling rap, rap, rap. You can actually expand that a little bit and tell the entire story. I can appreciate that. I want to get to these Cowboys here. We'll get to the game last night in just a second, but I want to go back to when this team was coming off three straight losses and really an embarrassing loss to the Jets. What happened, what changed after that game that's got them back on the right track with two division wins over the Eagles and the Giants?
I think a few things. I think it starts with health. You know, they didn't have two of their starting offensive linemen in that game, if you'll recall. They didn't have Lael Collins. They didn't have Zach Martin, or Zach Martin was struggling with his situation. Tyron Smith wasn't playing in that game. And so when you don't have those guys up front at full go, that's going to affect what you do on the football field. And then, you know, Dak Prescott kind of talked about this a little bit. They were feeling themselves at the beginning of the year. In other words, they weren't handling success as well as perhaps they should have. Now, he talked about after that win against the Eagles, which is, I think, the most complete we've really seen this team play, that they were going to do a better job of handling that. And they certainly got those 15 days of rest after the Eagles game. They went and they picked up Michael Bennett to account for the loss of Tyron Crawford, who ended up on IR. And I think they were able to reset a little bit. I think the one thing that has always stood out about this particular team, this generation, this new era of Cowboys, has been Dak Prescott. You know, I know Dak Prescott is working on that contract, and you can look week to week. He deserves it. The way that he galvanizes this locker room, the way he instills confidence in them. With a guy like Dak Prescott, it seems like he finds ways to win more than he finds ways to lose. And it's that confidence that he has in himself, but also puts out there for his football team, that I think is the reason why we've been able to see them sort of right the ship a little bit. Now, of course, there are still deficiencies. You know, they've got to do a better job with these turnovers, the penalties, the third down situations. Those are things that they know that they need to work on. But I think it's even seeing the way that that game got off from the jump, him throwing that pick right on the opening drive, first throw of the game, and the way they were able to reset and then dominate the Giants coming out with 52 seconds to go in the second quarter, and then the way they came out and played a really full and complete game in the second half says a lot about these Cowboys. And again, I put a lot of credit for that in that performance to Dak Prescott. A lot of other quarterbacks would have let a game like that on the road, the way you open up, rattle them. You saw Dak Prescott. He just didn't.
One of the things we like to spend a lot of time on, talking with different coaches and personnel guys around the league, it's just really kind of how you're building your culture, how you're building the foundation of your organization. And one of the keys to that is you got to have some energy guys in your locker room. Hopefully you've got one on each side of the ball. From the outside, it appears to me that Dak Prescott kind of is that energy giver on the offense. Is he that guy? And who is that guy on the defensive side of the ball?
Well, I think defensive side of the ball, the energy giver, you've kind of got two of them. I would say Jalen Smith is a big energy guy for them on the defensive side of the ball. But DeMarcus Lawrence, I mean, you saw DeMarcus Lawrence. Mm-hmm. We talked to him after the Eagles game, and he said he saw what was being said about him on the internet after he got the big contract in the offseason, that a lot of people didn't think that he was, you know, stepping up. This defense sucked. And he responded. We saw that in the Eagles game. We saw that again last night. And then I think then you've got guys like Robert Quinn jumping in, and then Michael Bennett so dominant last night in his first game with the Cowboys. But I think it starts with the unofficial leader of the Hot Boys on defense, that, of course, being DeMarcus Lawrence. But I think you're absolutely right on offense. I would definitely assign this one to Dak Prescott. The way that he just punches his fist through the air after every touchdown. It's, you know, Zeke has got the feed me and then move the chains. With Dak, it's always the punch in the air. And it seems like the guys sort of feed off of that energy.
Yeah, I think Zeke's a little more understated there. Dak definitely is a little more boisterous with his energy. And you can definitely see it does get the guys going a little bit. In that game last night, I thought it was the – we were talking a little bit before you came on here. I thought it was the best game from this group as an offensive line that they played. Really did a nice job of creating some space there for Zeke in the run game and kept Dak pretty clean. But what have you seen from this unit? I know they're getting a little bit long in the tooth there, but what have you seen from them and what's your expectation for them for the rest of the year?
Well, I think it's been big having Travis Frederick back. You saw that great report from Michelle Beiser on Monday Night Football when he was dealing with Guillain-Barré syndrome. Joe Looney did a nice job last year filling in for him, but Travis Frederick is such a methodical, thoughtful, interesting guy on that offensive line, such a smart guy. And if you talk to anybody in that offensive room, they talk about Travis Frederick. And I think it's been huge having him back on the line and having him healthy, given it was such an sort of a questionable diagnosis in the sense that when is he going to come back? When is he going to get feeling in his hands and his feet? And the fact they haven't seen any of that come back this year, you know, it's such a strange situation. And then, you know, we have been seeing the sort of breakdown of Tyron Smith and Zach Martin and them dealing with all sorts of injuries over the last couple of years. But, you know, giving them sort of those veteran days off, allowing them to have that 15, you know, days off during the bye week to get their health back, I think has been huge. But I think that we haven't even talked about Connor Williams. Connor Williams, you know, last year, this is his second year with the team. He's really stepped up. There are points in the game that I noticed him last night. You know, he put on a lot of weight in the offseason. He bulked up. The guys have really liked his work ethic, the way that he's blended in with this team. So I think what you're seeing there is you're seeing depth on this offensive line. But they're also there's some fluidity there that in the situation where one guy's got to come out, they've got other options. Guys like Xavier Suafila, of course, Cam Fleming was out yet for the game on Monday because of his situation with injury right now. But they do have a lot of depth there that they feel comfortable, you know, filling in for those guys when they're not 100%. But we're talking about a line that's so dominant. We've just had such high expectations for them, Daniel. You know, but you've also got to consider that even the Travis Frederick the other day we were talking about, he's like, I'm 28 years old. I know that doesn't sound old, but, you know, we are guys that carry a lot of weight on our bodies. You know, we're taking a lot of hits on this offensive line. You know, there are going to be games and weeks where we're feeling our bodies break down. So that's what he talked about. It was so important getting those days off to get healthy. And you see when you've got a healthy offensive line, what this offense is capable of.
Has Connor Williams been a nice shoulder for you to cry on after a tough Texas loss this year? I'm just curious.
You know, Connor doesn't talk too much about Texas. You know, him and Tom Herman, of course, didn't end well.
I remember.
Didn't end well. You remember all of that? You know, Tom Herman, not exactly glowing reviews of some of the players that decided to leave the University of Texas program early. So Connor hasn't been abundantly outspoken about that, but he's also not going to cheer for the team as loudly as perhaps he might have in the past. He still wears his burnt orange proudly and cheers for his former teammates, but I think he's about where I'm at when it comes to cheering for Texas, and we'll leave it at that these days.
Yeah, I'll leave that one right there. The contract situation, it seems like it's been kind of hanging over this team. They get Zeke done. But you mentioned, you know, Dak and being kind of that offensive leader, the energy guy. You know, I looked at just some of the numbers. This is what he's on pace for this year. So he's on pace for 4,760 yards, 30 touchdowns, 16 picks. So the picks are a little bit high. You touched on the turnovers there. But overall, I mean, to me, I have this thing I call the confetti test, Jane. In other words, when you ask if you need to pay your quarterback, I say, can you envision this quarterback hoisting the trophy with the confetti falling on their head? Is he good enough to get you there? And to me, Dak clearly passes that test. I think he's a championship-caliber quarterback. So it seems like it's just a matter of time when this deal is going to come down. But it seems – is it talked about a lot in the building? And where are we at on that whole thing?
The only people it seems like that are talking about this contract, quite frankly, is the media. You know, periodically, Ian and I will put out reports about where they're at. In these discussions, at last check, my sources told me they didn't even discuss this during the bye week, which I was actually a little shocked by. Now, I had reported, and Todd France's agent disputed, that their opening number was $40 million. I still stand by that report. Of course, in all of these negotiations, you start with the top of the ceiling number, and then your goal is to sort of get down towards the middle of it. Now, it's my understanding Right. It's my understanding they're in that 33-35 range, which is where I think a lot of people saw Dak Prescott's contract and where it should be. It's what he wants. So given that knowledge, I'm a little confused as to why it hasn't happened either. There's been some discussion out there that it might be the years of service. In other words, the Cowboys want to give him 6. They're looking at 4, so they can't move the money around. He gets more of the money up front. I haven't been able to iron any of that out. That makes a little bit more sense, though, as we're talking about this, because it's not a situation where they're sort of on a prove-it deal with Dak. They've seen everything they need to see from him. This is a guy, as I've talked about before, I mean, we really saw in his rookie year, this guy was 4th on the depth chart. People forget that. Jamil Showers was ahead of him. It was Tony Romo, Kellen Moore, Jamil Showers, who was no longer here and who they moved to defense, and then Dak Prescott. And the way that Dak Prescott so seamlessly came in, took over this locker room, and not only did such a good job taking over for Tony Romo, that Romo was not even allowed to compete for that job. And the fact that he has been able to, like I said, through the Zeke suspensions and through the twists and turns of the seasons in the last 4 years since he's been here, I thought Dak has done everything that you want for a football player, the franchise guy, both on the field and off of it. He is your pitch man. You know, we were talking about Texas earlier. We're talking about a head coach at the University of Texas. You need him to not only be a good football coach, but a good politician. You sort of need that at the quarterback position in Dallas, and Dak has certainly done that. So I've gotten no sense that the Cowboys or Dak don't want to get this done. What I respect about Dak is if he really wanted to stick it to him, he could have held out at training camp. He knew the importance of him being there, especially with some of these young receivers and this offense and their goals and their expectations for themselves. He showed up, he stuck his head down, and he's really he hasn't talked about his contract unless he's been asked about it. And even when he's been asked about it, he really doesn't want to get into it. So I respect that about him, that he doesn't want to put his money out there, that that hasn't been a focus. And if anything, he's just stuck to trying to get this team focused, turn it around when things aren't going well, and inspire this team in moments when they need it to help them get some of these wins. But if no one's asking my opinion, but just from what I've seen the last 4 years, pay the guy's money. I don't think you're going to find a better guy out there on the open market or in the draft.
No, I'm with you. And to me, the number that does not get talked about is 56. 56 straight times, the whistle's blown, he's been out there on the field. So he's been available, he's been durable, he's been reliable. And to me, that matters. That's a big deal. I want to touch real quick. I don't want to let this one go because you talked about, you know, being the head coach of Texas, being the quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys. I think a lot of people, you got people that listen to this thing from all over the country and even internationally. I don't think they have any idea of the spotlight on the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, you see it up close with the throng of media and the attention, and I'm sure you can't go out to any restaurant in town. I mean, just give the people a little idea of what it's like when you hold that position.
Well, it's funny because, like I said, I started the NFL Network right when Dak Prescott took over that job, and a lot of us thought he was a placeholder, right? And I was here when Tony Romo was third string Tony, when it was Vinny Testaverde, and it was, they had the Drew Bledsoe, Drew Henson, and then Tony. And you see the transformation, right? And I will say that Dak Prescott has not changed at all. Like, not in public, in private. He's just always so steady. And Jason Garrett always says it best. He never gets too high. He never gets too low. And I appreciate that about him. And, you know, I do see guys out and about away from the locker room. And he just always is the same guy. But when you're in Dallas and you put that star on your helmet and you have an owner like Jerry Jones who is as lauded at training camp and at these visiting and opposing stadiums, I mean, people are shouting Jerry's name. We saw him in New Orleans on Bourbon Street, people yelling Jerry's name as he's walking down Bourbon with a drink in his hand and his bodyguard. You just don't see that in the league. But that's sort of the personality and the dynamic here in Dallas. Is everything is so much bigger in Texas, and especially when you're the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, you are immediately compared to some of the greats, the Roger Staubachs, the Troy Aikmans. And there have certainly been guys who have come here and they have not seen success. I mean, we can go down the list of all the quarterbacks from Troy Aikman until Tony Romo.
What about Chad Hutchinson? You're not going to touch on Chad Hutchinson here?
There were some forgettable quarterbacks here in Dallas. But I think Dak Prescott has solidified as a memorable one and one that I think has really worn the star well. He's been a good representative of it. And then just talk at the numbers, the way that he's performed on the field. And I'm always so impressed with the way that he battles back from adversity. And he's talked about, you know, his mother died of cancer, while he was in college. He went through a lot growing up, and so he knows what real adversity looks like. But it's just the way that he's able to come back, even when these games, you know, they start off poorly, or they're, it just, it feels like the bricks are stacked against them. And then the way they come back in the second half, in the third quarter, I think that's what stands out the most for me, is just the guy is so resilient.
Yeah, resilient and tough. I mean, that was definitely part of the scouting report of him, what he's been through on and off the field, no doubt. Two more things, I'll let you go. And these are the serious matters here, Jane. So I need you to really buckle in here. As a Texas Longhorn, if I'm going to give you these four Longhorns and you could rank them 1, 2, 3, 4, just in terms of your favorite, they're all accomplished in different ways, but you just got to go 1, 2, 3, 4. We've got McConaughey, kind of the off the field, okay? We've got Kevin Durant, obviously representing the basketball program. And then we've got, I'll give you two football players. I'll give you Vince Young and Ricky Williams. So just Jane Slater's favorite Longhorns in that four. See, I'm challenging you here.
Matthew McConaughey, the Minister of Culture, has got to be my one seed. I mean, the way that he comes
out. He's on Instagram now, I was told.
I love it. Yes, he joined Instagram this week. he's so philosophical. He's so interesting. I used to work for the Longhorn Network, and when he would do an interview with you, you aren't really focused. I mean, obviously, he's an attractive man, but he pulls you in. I think he would pull in a man or woman just with his intensity. When he talks to you, it's just like this laser-sharp focus. It's sort of like I'm the captain now. It's fascinating. So he's my one seed. And then I'm going to have to go Ricky Williams.
Okay.
Ricky and I also worked at Longhorn Network together. And he is one of the smartest guys I've ever worked with. He's getting his PhD right now, as a matter of fact. I just saw him recently. And he's there in Venice. And he's doing astrological readings. And, you know, he's traveling the world. And he's obviously a big cannabis supporter. And he is just one of the most you could talk more with him about just life in general than even football and his football accomplishments. Yeah. I mean, I was in college when he was with the Run Ricky Run days. So we could talk about that all day, but he's one of the most fascinating guys that I've ever talked to. Let's see. What was my other ones? I had Kevin Durant and...
So you've got VY and Durant. So now you've got to sort out...
I love Kevin Durant. I love Kevin Durant. He has been unnecessarily vilified in the league. I don't really care that he had a burner account. Personally, if you keep in mind, he was a little sheltered growing up. He lived with his mom for a really long time, which I always appreciated. His MVP speech about his mom will forever go down as like one of my favorites ever. And then Vince Young. Vince Young's just, Vince is Vince. We'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. There you go. There you go. All right. Got you 1 through 4 there. Okay. That was some serious business. Last thing that I'm going to let you go. In scouting, you know, one of the things that you always focus on, you find guys that are successful, you'll find a tremendous work ethic. And sometimes it doesn't necessarily pay off initially, but eventually it does. And so, you know, as an observer of social media, I don't know that there's anybody working harder on their golf game than Jane Slater. So I just want to know, have you started to see the results, or are we still waiting for those to come in the future?
Actually, I shot a 108 recently, so I was pretty proud of myself. I'm consistently hitting about double bogey. Look at this. This was the summer of golf.
We
I'm
got
trying
footage.
To turn it into
always scouting.
Yes, I'm trying to turn it into fall of golf. But yeah, I've got a really great golf coach, this guy named Matt Anderson. And I go out there and I really approach this as if I'm Tony Romo I never got it. I was always like, you're getting paid millions to be the quarterback in the Dallas Cowboys. If they don't want you to play golf, don't play golf. And I always thought it was absurd, his obsession with golf. And now that I'm playing and I've got an instructor and
you
start to see your game improve, I totally get it now. So everything I said about Tony Romo and his golf game, I 1,000 take it back. Like I now understand why so many greats. I mean, if you think about some of the greatest guys that have played the game of football, hockey, baseball, you go down the list, they all turn to golf after that. Why? Because it's one of the hardest games to play consistently good at. You might have a day where you go out and shoot 108, and then the next day you're like, I didn't even take score because it was that bad. I lost, you know, 10 balls that day. So I'm addicted. I'm all in. I can't guarantee that it's going to be anything to write home about, but my goal this year is to at least be a decent golfer in a pro-am. So we'll see.
There you go. That's the goals. That's where we're headed, and the work is being put in. I'll let you go on this. I talked to Romo before the Chargers game on Sunday, and me and Matt Money Smith were talking with him about, you know, him and Nance playing golf on the road and probably get a chance to see a lot of these nice courses. And he goes, look, a lot of people think I'm playing golf all the time and I'm not working. He said, it's ridiculous. I only played 6 times this week. Okay. So, you know, it's not like I'm doing that every day. I took a day off.
I'm so lucky if I get it in funny. Once a week. And I mean, I don't even have his commitments.
It was funny. Hey, Jane, thank you so much for your time today. I know you're really busy, but that was great to get some insight there on the Dallas Cowboys. Long appreciated the work that you do. A true pro. And appreciate your time.
Always appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Well, there you go. That's going to do it for us today. Jane Slater joining the show, talking a little Cowboys. We'll catch you next time right here on Move the Sticks.